Get a cup of tea, warm up, get some sugar in your system. No falling asleep. We're ready? Okay. Full-time job. So this afternoon session is actually dedicated to you guys as patients and caregivers. I want to just mention a couple things. Deborah Murray in the back, she represents the MDS Foundation. She is, as being a representative, she also is in possession of a cookbook. If anybody's interested in learning some interesting recipes, MDS Foundation is selling it for $10. If anybody's interested in buying something or breezing through it. And also, again, use her as a reference in case you have any other further questions or future questions to help you get your answers. Again, feel free to reach out to me as well. I'm at Hackensack. You can use MDS and just say, Jayshree, I have a question for Jayshree or whatever, and they'll email it to me, and I'll answer them back, or I'll call you, or whatever the case may be. There is a survey in your binder. If you haven't done one online, it's a survey just because we want to know you as a person and a caregiver. It is pretty lengthy, and the reason we ask those specific questions in that long survey is, again, we're collecting data. If we have data to identify how many patients exist, what are those patients' and caregivers' needs, we can share that with the government and say, I need resources. I need money. I need funding, right? If you don't collect data, we can't prove it to the government and say this is an issue, this is a concern. So we're collecting the data for that purpose. If you get a chance, please fill it out. If you don't, feel free to go online and fill it out. And there's also an evaluation form regarding Dr. Allen's presentation, my presentation, and what else can we offer you as patient and caregivers in the future. Because we'll be hosting this again in the future, maybe a year or two from now, again, in Long Island, probably, or New York City. Again, there will be new speakers, new information, hopefully, new drugs, hopefully. Hopefully. Again, that's what clinical trials are all about and research. So, all right, I'm going to turn the floor to you. Please move the microphones closer to you. I want you to introduce yourself if you can. Tell me where you're from and what brings you here? What do you want to gain from here, from this session, this conference? So I'll start with you, Ms. Monica. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Monica Carey. Most of my friends and family call me Mona, okay? This is my husband, Tom, okay?
Yes.
That's cute.
I was diagnosed with this about 8 months ago, so I'm new to this. I found this very informative today. Most of you people here are much more knowledgeable than I am. I'm just learning how to even say what I have. I just tell everybody it's MDS. I don't know. There's this long name. I don't know what I have. It has something to do with my blood, okay? Listening to you people, I was very impressed. I guess I have a lot of reading to do when I go home to catch up halfway to what you people know. Okay, and I'm just hoping to learn as much as I can about what we have and hope that we're in good hands.
Very good, thank you.
Thank you.
Tom? Well, she made your introduction, but you want to share anything as a caregiver?
I'm still Tom, her husband. again, I'm just here to drive her here.
Aww, well, you're a good support.
I you know, to learn what we can about it and get some, do the right thing with it.
Do you mind if I ask you, how did you hear about this conference?
We got something in the mail.
Deborah?
She's talking to me.
Did you research it online and found out that it's...
We don't have no computer. We have no stinking computer.
Oh, okay.
No, we don't have one.
I know where you're going after this. Did your oncologist tell you about this program?
No,
a friend of ours looked it up on his computer, gave us a phone number, and my wife called, and I believe she spoke to Deborah.
Deborah, okay.
Yes.
Oh, very nice. And, good friend connection.
Yes. Debbie's French?
Your friends.
Oh, friend. Friend. I thought you said
friend.
French. And that's pretty much
get
it.
Get the microphone away yes. from him.
Did you hear the one about the rabbi?
He's going to go into his henny yellow.
All right. We have Mike over here and Cindy. Go ahead. Please speak into the microphone. Introduce yourselves. What brings you here?
Okay. Yeah, my name is Mike. I mainly come with it was my wife. Her father, my father-in-law, has an MBS.
Where is he?
He's in Beijing, China, so he couldn't be here. So we're
you're
trying
representing.
To, yeah.
Okay.
We're trying to hear and you know, learn as much as we can and identify some resources that we can use to okay. help you know formally diagnose the issue and see what are the possible treatments.
Awesome. Well, welcome. Thank you.
My name is Cindy Liu, and my father was diagnosed as MDS. I think my mother said about 1 year and a half ago, and but he had felt tired for many, many years. You know, he came over 2009 when my daughter graduated from college, and he came here, but he always said he was tired. And only, I think about 1.5 years ago, they diagnosed him as MDS, RARS.
Okay.
I think. And also, he also is diagnosed with MPN.
Okay.
And so he's in the hospital right now, and the reason he's in the hospital, I think in April, they checked his blood count. It was better. And a hemoglobin, he was like a 6.3 or whatever. So they said he needed a red blood transfusion.
He needs some support.
After that, he felt better. It went back to 8. So we went back then back in August. So he went to the hospital again. They checked it was 6.3 or whatever. So he got the red blood transfusion.
Okay.
Then he got some lung infection.
Okay.
So he's coughing a lot right now. He's very, very tired. So in August, I went back for 2 weeks. He was very, very weak. And he's in the hospital. I tried to get as much information as possible because the doctor over there, she never seen this disease. She heard about it, but she doesn't know how to treat him.
Right.
So basically, she's not treating him. And she just gave her
transfusion,
blood, supportive care. She said that there's no better way in the whole world can treat this kind of illness. That's what she said. So I tried to get the information. My mother is also a doctor, and she was a doctor. She was a pediatrician. Of course, she doesn't know all this,
sure.
but she is reading as much as she can. I send all this information to her. So we try to learn as much as possible to see how we can help maybe pass the information to the doctor.
How wonderful, and I wish him well. I think you have captured all of the necessary paperwork to share with the physician in China, and hopefully, as you learned today, there are treatments available, and maybe they'll be able to institute it and offer that therapy. Good luck. Go ahead, Mark.
Okay. Hi, Mark.
Yes, ma'am.
Isn't there a center of excellence
yes.
in China?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, I did reach out. I talked to MDF Andrea,
yes.
MDS Foundation. She gave me the phone number in China and called. They just told me the patients have to go to the center of excellence to see the doctor, but my father is too weak to go there.
Mm.
So
because I was doing some research, and actually. The greatest, the largest amount of research connecting benzene and MDS has come out of China.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Well,
okay.
I think the connections, Cindy is definitely going to make that connection with Centers of Excellence, which we spoke about, and she's going to work on that and see how MDS can be the intermediate party to feel it out a little bit better. Yes, Mark.
Mark, I was diagnosed about 1.5 years ago. The bizarre thing, of course, is I don't feel anything. So it's a cytogenetic diagnosis. My blood levels are all a little bit low, but perhaps not enough to feel anything. So I'm basically here to learn more about the disease, the treatments, and what I can expect, and when I can expect to have to intervene in some way,
okay.
In any fashion. So that's basically my story right now.
Okay.
name is Sam Manohara. My wife is the patient. We know Jayshree. We go to her many years now. So she will explain the disease.
Okay, my name is Ambuja. You can call me the short, they call me Mona too.
Mona number two.
Yeah, because I'm a nurse. I was a nurse, I retired 2 years ago. But when her, she works with Dr. Goldberg, very good doctor, I miss him. She said that he's gonna leave, I'm so sorry. I hope, give him my, you know.
I will. I'll say hello
to him. I miss him. I'm going to miss him. But when they diagnosed it in 2004 with the Q5Q minus, and I was at that time, I was very scared what it's going to be, leukemia or this. But then they assured me this is not leukemia, but it's kind of, well, anyway, I got into that, and I'm okay so far. And I come to the meetings whenever I can to see what's the new medication, what's the new therapy, what is anything new there. So that's why I come for new information. And I'm doing okay, no medication. I took Revlimid for 3 months, and then after that they stopped it. It was okay, so everything, blood count is stable. I showed it to you.
Yes, your status quo. And the best part, they're going on vacation tomorrow. I'm jealous.
Where are you going?
Bermuda.
Bermuda. Is that Charles? I'm sorry.
Charles, yes.
Charles, go ahead.
My name is Charles. And I live in Patchogue, Suffolk County, Long Island. I was first diagnosed about 2.5 years ago with a hemoglobin of 11 during a routine physical. And I went through the routine, you know, the hematologist and the bone marrow test and everything else, and it was determined that I had MDS with RARS. Mm-hmm. And the first 6 months, I was given the erythropoietin.
Yes. Growth factor, Procrit, or RNS?
One of those,
yes.
Which did nothing for me, absolutely. Finally, the hemoglobin dropped down to about 7, and I started taking Revlimid 2 years ago, which got my hemoglobin up to 11. And I've been doing quite well with it, except that during the last 3 months or so, it has dropped down to about 8.8.
Okay.
So maybe we're reaching the end of the Revlimid deal, which probably the next step would be one of the drugs that we spoke about, Vidaza or something like that.
Okay, well, we wish you well. I hope that you attained some information about potentially maybe even considering clinical trial or looking into it as an opportunity.
You said you were diagnosed 1.5 years ago?
2.5 years ago.
2.5 years ago.
Right.
And regular routine blood test, that's what happened with me. And you were an 11 at the time?
Right.
How long did it take to drop from 11 to an 8? You said you went down from 7?
Just gradually over time.
Like how much time?
Those 2 years, 2.5 years.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Okay, thank you.
Hi. I'm Randy. I am the patient advocate for my husband, who had anemia for a number of years before he was officially diagnosed in 2009, was the official diagnosis. And he'd rather be watching a football game. but I think that these are very important moments, because if you learn one thing at a meeting, it's important to go forward, to have information.
Can I talk? My name is Jerry. I am of an attitude that life takes its chances. I was anemic many years ago. I have not been on any drugs. We were about to go on a protocol when my wife says, not for me. And she marched me through three doctors. And the third doctor said, let's monitor you. I'm being monitored going on to the fourth year. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
I had to ask permission. My attitude is a little different than others because of my age. I'm 80 years old. I'm going to see you next year, Samuel. You take me on the boat?
Yeah.
I think this is a wonderful situation whereby you learn some of the things and experience of others. You're very fortunate.
Can you speak a little louder?
See? You're very fortunate that the nurse practitioner you're seeing right now is one of the best. And that's because we've been to about six different sessions such as this. Sometimes it's confusing with some of the doctors or how they speak or their attitude. You're going to go to more than one. You're going to meet more than one doctor, and each one's going to tell you something that you can grasp and take home with you. But you grasp a lot from the people you're with because of their experiences and your experience.
Thank you.
Randy, my wife, is very curious and speaks to people and picks up information, and that's why she'll march me to every meeting that we can get to because there's an inkling of information that might make her comfortable or open the door for something. At 80, there are not many doors that could be open, but she's still trying. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Alan. My wife is Judy. I'm the caregiver. The decision that we have to make is because they haven't had a definitive diagnosis of MDS, but they have diagnosed Judy as aplastic anemia some days, and some days it's MDS. And we're going over whether or not to have a stem cell transplant. And when you hear how scary it is, when a doctor stands up there and says it's like being hit by a truck, and then he says that one out of every two patients does not do well. I mean, this is an enormous decision. And he actually said you could die from the treatment. Not necessarily from the disease, but from the treatment. It's truly a family decision that we're going through, and it's a very hard decision for us. And we're just trying to get as much information as possible. We'd like to speak to people who have actually went through the transplant process. That would be very helpful for us, and that's why we're here.
Definitely reach out to your oncologist. I think he or she would be, and the coordinators from the transplant department would be happy to hook you up with the ones that have gone through it to talk about their experience.
Hi, I'm Judy, and I think a lot of you heard when I asked the doctor the question earlier. For me, I was diagnosed with lymphoma 5 years ago and went through a course of treatment that ended up with ICE, intensive chemotherapy, three sessions. Each one was 48 hours of straight chemo over a three-month period. Anyways, my lymphoma is cured, but unfortunately, through a routine physical exam, primary doctor had retired, and we had come home from a vacation in California, and I developed a cough cold for 2 weeks, and I said, gee, I better go find a doctor in case I need an antibiotic. And through a routine blood test, she called me to say I was anemic and my platelets were low. So I called my treating oncologist who did a bone marrow biopsy, which came back negative. And I just 2 weeks ago had my fifth bone marrow biopsy, which came back negative. My chromosomes are normal. The biopsy is normal. So they've been going back and forth whether I had MDS, which was the the prevalent thought until last week I met with the transplant doctor who had done the last biopsy, and now they feel it's aplastic anemia because my chromosomes are normal. So he felt that the conservative approach right now is to do cyclosporine and see how that works, and you know, leave transplant on the table for the future. So, you know, it's a hard decision. When you sort of have a diagnosis, it's easier to make a decision. When the doctors aren't really sure what you have, you know, you feel like, well, it's a little bit of a crapshoot. So we're trying to get everything, learn everything we can about. Now we'll have to learn more about aplastic anemia. We've been focusing the last 10 months on MDS, so that's why we're here. Okay. We found out, you wanted to know, I had Googled bone marrow failure and came up with an organization that was called the Marrow Forum and signed onto their website. And under conferences, I found this conference, and that's
how
I signed up. Yeah.
Okay. The only thing I'll add is, you know, if you look at it, you look healthy, you feel good, yet they're telling you that you have this this situation which is extremely serious. But you feel good. You're doing everything. You're living your life. And then they recommend to you to go through this procedure that they're telling you you're going to be hit by a truck. What do they want us to do?
It's very tough to process that. I think it takes time, but at the end of the day, it sounds like you guys are still in that phase of identifying exactly what you have.
Right.
And, you know, that in itself is very complicated and time-consuming. Because in the beginning, I could tell you, most of my patients and other patients have shared just understanding what, if you have MDS or aplastic anemia or MPN, whatever, you know, three-letter name or whatever you have, it's a big change. It's a big change.
I have a question. Do you find that the doctors that specialize in MDS also specialize in aplastic anemia?
They do. They do.
So it would be the same specialty.
It is. As Dr. Allen mentioned earlier, it does overlap. The three diseases, they tend to go in and out, kind of. But I think ultimately is looking at the bone marrow now, which you just had, mm-hmm. and identifying what it is, what chromosomes, issues, if there are any, and how do you feel, you know? And coming up with, I think they suggested probably transplant as an option is because they want to have something in the back pocket in case plan A doesn't work, that you have plan B to go to and ready to go if need be.
And what I also want to add is right now, basically since when do we start the transfusions, I go for a transfusion pretty much like every 6 weeks.
Okay.
Six to seven weeks, my hemoglobin goes below 8.
So, I'm sure...
No, in the sevens.
I'm sure that's something that you may want to, again, talk with your oncologist about to make sure. I'm sure they're monitoring your iron levels, your ferritin, and making sure you don't have iron overload. You know, any potential patient that is considering transplants as an option, they've done enough studies to prove that patients who have iron overload, meaning too much iron deposits in different organs, can result in poor survival when they get to transplant. So that's something that, you know, they have to think about before they get the patient into transplant. Because, again, we want them to have the best chance if you were to go through that big, you know, procedure of going through transplant, getting hit by the truck. You want to have the best odds going in. So that's something that they definitely look at very closely. Yes, Jerry.
Have anybody suggested hyperbaric chamber treatment for the patient who has this low hemoglobin? It can't hurt.
Sure.
Can it help? And is it only temporary that and then it blows out?
You know, I don't know too much about the correlation or if that's something that's offered. Right now, that's not the standard, but that's something that I'm sure maybe an oncologist or hematologist may be willing to want to look at. I think it's hard enough trying to find a place that has that available. There are
New Jersey. Come on out.
Yeah, I know. In Hackensack, they just opened it up, actually. But I don't know if they would be inclined to want to try it. Again, it's something of an experiment somewhat. So just know that. It's not the standard.
But it's not an invasive experiment.
Correct.
So it's something that
before you go through all the steps, you could take a shot, and if your doctor will go along.
I think it takes a trial, a clinical trial of some kind for patients, potentially like yourself, to want to participate and consider in doing it, ultimately. Hey, you got to add the legality component because it's you know, safety is an issue. Yes. Yeah. Good thought, though.
I'm Mary from Long Island. My husband, Angelo, he's the patient. I'm here to support him, but also to just listen to all you guys and see if there's something that might help him down the road in the future. He's been on just about all the medicines. He's transfusion dependent every 10 to 14 days, and he's been doing that for how long?
6 years.
6 years. So, you know, every time he goes, I say, let those veins work, God, please. You know, so... where do we go from here? That's the thing. Yeah.
Again, use MDS Foundation as a resource if you want to go on to see if there's any trials or something that you may want to consider in participating or looking through it. It's very tough, and I think everybody that has ever gotten a transfusion or two or whatever, they know how long and tedious it is, and it does impact your quality of life, but
you don't travel. You really can't try to schedule a vacation. It's like hello,
I know,
because you might need it on a Monday or Tuesday, but then the next time will be on a Friday. So how do you do it? It's every 10.
But I mean, they tell you every 10 days.
No. You go through blood tests and you go through what you're feeling at the time.
Okay.
If you've got absolutely no energy, it's because it's time for you to get some blood.
And sure enough, he'll go to the doctor and he'll say, no, I bet you're 9. And, you know, does the test and he's like 7'7". And another thing, why is it that you have to be above 8 to get a transfusion? I mean below 8. Excuse me, to get a transfusion. Isn't it if they made it 9, at least you'd have some sort of quality where you could think? I mean, I see times, he's been as low as 5'7", and walking, to my amazement, okay?
Yeah.
But I see how it's hard to focus when you're that low. I think that if the people in the hospital, or the ones who made this determination, worked on 7.7, they'd say, maybe we should raise this to 12, you know, right? Because they'd realize that you can't think, you can't function at that number.
Right, because again, when you think about what hemoglobin is, it's iron and it needs oxygen. So combination of it working together for you to function. It depends on the institution. You know, at our institution, we have a different cutoff, but we also make exceptions. So I think it goes by case to case. It goes by institution to institution. I think it's something that your institution, wherever you're going to, will have to consider that Angelo is special. He's different. His comorbidities, his issue of having MDS is where, you know what, having a 8.5 is low for him.
Mm-hmm.
He needs a boost.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I think it's a balance of resources. Sometimes the blood transfusions, you know, people have antibodies, may take 2 days, two, three days before they find the match. You know, and over time, there are lots of implications of when you get so much blood that you build up those antibodies, you build up more reactions. So those are things that we as practitioners think about. So that's where we come from, but we never want to impact quality of life. I think we want to offer that. Okay, and take it as again, person to person.
Your patients who get blood transfusions, if they don't get them as often as was just described, can their family members donate blood for them to get?
Yes. We welcome any patient that is not first degree relative that's not going to transplant. Yes. So, you know, if you, Randy, were to to donate blood for Jerry, yes, you can, and we welcome it.
Does your doctor who you work with recommend vitamins without iron or multivitamin
We do, as a basis for, you know, my role as a nurse practitioner is to screen and identify patients that are identify patients that need treatment, what treatment, the schedule of treatment, and monitor the safety and the side effect profile. And in regards to vitamins and stuff, I have to go through the med list. That's my main priority and information, because I can tell you what the patient has diagnosis-wise, what am I going to be looking out for, the drug-to-drug interactions. A multivitamin is not going to hurt you. It's a water-soluble type of a therapy. But it's also very important that you, as patients and caregivers, that you share any herbs, any vitamins, anything else that you may be taking, and letting us know. I'm surprised every day that I practice that when I ask the question, can you give me the list of medicines that you're taking? And they give me the list. My next question is, can I have the list of vitamins and herbs or anything different? And here comes another list. Not really. I, you know, every patient is different. I do look at that for patients that have iron overload that I know that's an issue. Then I do recommend multivitamin without iron. Majority of the time, the iron is such a small component of it in the multivitamin that it does not matter.
And in your experience, vitamin D3,
yes.
What is your experience about that with MD?
I'm all for it. Any person that lives in the East Coast or actually even southern part, we don't get enough sun. And of course, everybody says wear sunscreen, sunscreen, sunscreen. If you checked everybody's vitamin D level here, probably about 75% of all of us have levels below the norm. And that's just because we live in this area, we're indoors all the time, we don't get enough, even from the food, dietary-wise. So I welcome any number of people that want to participate and take a vitamin D medication in addition to calcium to go ahead and do so. It's not going to hurt you. Yes.
Hi, but
I have a question. When you have a so frequent blood transfusion, do you have the iron overload issue?
Yes.
You do?
I treat that with XJ.
With an oral chelating medicine to take daily to take the iron out.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So that drug is very expensive, right?
It is.
You need to pay by yourself, or it is covered?
I'm on Medicare. It has some partial coverage. I think it's been estimated my cost is going to be around $2,000 a month.
So knowing that these medicines, you know, do cost a significant amount of money, it leads us to the next person that's going to be talking. Her name is Lauren, and she works for Diplomat Pharmacy.
If I can,
yes.
Just...
Additional to you,
yeah.
Yes.
I think it's important for me to just give you a synopsis of where I've been and where I'm at this point. I was diagnosed when I was 60, 12 years ago, and at that time I was able to be treated with Procrit as the only treatment source that worked effectively very well for a period of 6 years. I had no transfusions whatsoever. Whenever my blood level got low enough, give me a shot of Procrit, and it boosts me up to a condition where transfusion was not needed nor recommended by the health community. 6 years ago or so, I started requiring transfusions, and up to this point, I have tried every one of the drug treatments that Dr. Allen spoke about to no avail for my particular case. At this point, I'm waiting for Mr. New to come out on board and see where I go from there. The important thing about me is not me, but the fact that I've already outlived all the expectations. So I think that it's important to give people hope
yes.
that will work.
And I welcome that, and I think that sentiment is shared by everyone that is here. So thank you.
Hello, my name is Lauren Gianapini. I am here on behalf of Diplomat Specialty Pharmacy. As Jayshree was kind of mentioning, our pharmacy does a lot more than just dispense your oral chemotherapy medication. As Dr. Allen had touched, some of these chemotherapies are very expensive and they leave you with very high copays. So what Diplomat does, we see if you guys are available for any copay assistance. There are third-party foundations that are available that have funds in place to hopefully alleviate you from that high-dollar copay. So I'm really here representing Diplomat and letting you guys know that there are resources available to help with those high-dollar amount copays. And if I don't know, which most likely I won't because there's so many different avenues that the script can go down, but I'm a resource here to at least take back and help find an answer and see if we can help in any way with your oral chemotherapy prescriptions.
Do you have cards?
I do have some brochures with me that I can do right now. And if anyone has any questions afterwards, I can share my information and we can follow up with you afterwards.
Thank you.
I guess I'll help. My name is Rich. I live in Huntington, right here on the island, so this was easy to get to. I was diagnosed with MDS about 10 years ago. Routine physical. Well, actually, it had gone on for a few years before that, where the doctor kept saying, "You're anemic, go see an oncologist." And first time I ignored it, then a year later I went and she said, "Well, some people are just anemic." And then I went to another one a year after that after he told me again, and she did a bone marrow test and said that I had MDS, trisomy 8 is the variation of it that I have. Longest time it was watch and wait. I think my hemoglobin was 11 point something. Got down to, I guess in the tens. I ended up going to Sloan Kettering, and Dr. Clement is my doctor there. I went down into the tens, and they put me on erythropoietin, and I got those shots for a while. They did a little bit in the beginning, and then they tapered off in what they were doing, and the dosage were increased and whatever. And then I got down to a point where my hemoglobin was in the eights, and I was offered a clinical trial, and I chose to have transfusions. And I've been on transfusions now, I guess, for the better part of a year, and I get 2 units of red blood cells every... it started out at 7, that was too far, 7 weeks. Went down to 6, and lately it's been 5 weeks. Last time I went in there, my hemoglobin was 7.6, and so I'm in between transfusions now. So I'll see what it comes out to next time. That's where I'm at.
What were you feeling like at 8.5, say?
I didn't feel bad. As a matter of fact,
when did you start feeling bad?
When I get into the sevens. But I got to admit that the last time I went into the city. You know, part of this is a psychological component to this, too. And I went into the city, which has become quite routine now. And I'm going in there and I'm saying to myself, well, we went from 6 to 5 weeks, and I feel pretty good. And then they did the blood test, and it was 7.6. And then I felt pretty lousy. And then I got my
Just after the blood test.
So, on the other hand, when I leave there, I catch a bus and I go out the side door, if you're familiar with the hospital, and I quite often I'll run for the M4, the M66 bus.
Run.
And yeah, I can. It's downhill. that last time I was moving a little slow going down to the bus, so.
I just think, you know, there's a lot to this, and there's a psychological part. When I get down into the sevens, I can feel it. I don't get winded. I can feel it in my throat. I can feel throbbing in my head. But, you know, when I exert myself. But, you know, that's kind of the way it is. That's where we're at now.
Have they offered any therapies to you that you are considering, or is what made you want to do transfusions and not consider a clinical trial?
They offered me a study.
Okay.
That involved Revlimid and something else.
Mm-hmm.
EPO. And I read that. The EPO I'm not worried about. The Revlimid thing, I read that, you know, all the side effects of this stuff. And I said, I can have all these problems, or I could have the transfusions and have like a normal life.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided that I'll save the problems for later. And, you know, so it's, but by the way, my iron is now up to, it was 1100 or 1200 or something. So I didn't see the doctor last time. I saw a nurse or a nurse practitioner. And in 3 weeks or so, I'll see the doctor, and I wouldn't be surprised if we had a discussion about, I will have a discussion about the iron.
Overload,
so,
okay.
Yeah, so I'm bringing it up. That's where I'm at.
Yes, ma'am.
How many years have you been doing the transfusions? Because I'm sort of on it's like 6 weeks.
I think it's been about a week. About a year.
A year.
Yeah, I haven't really kept track of that. But I think it's been.
Did Dr. Koenig recommend any type of transplant or anything of that nature to you?
She said I'm not ready for that, and that if I was in need of it, this was probably 6 months ago, she said that. If I was in need of it, she'd recommend it, but she didn't see me as being ready for that now, which, since I'm 67, I thought it was encouraging that she thought I was that healthy. I don't know whether, you know, plug along for another 3 years or something, which she recommended then, I don't know. But that's where I'm at. Right now, my concern is the iron and that those intervals are getting to be shorter mm-hmm. between transfusions. It's always 2 units of red blood cells.
That's what you get red blood cells.
Yeah.
Yeah.
2 units of red blood cells. It's a day. It's a day.
Go ahead, Caroline.
I'm Caroline. I'm married to Richard. I came just for more education and to find out what was new in terms of treatment. And so I'm here.
Okay, welcome. Go ahead,
Excuse
Toby.
I'm Toby, and I originally, before I got sick, had a hemoglobin of 15, which I had my entire adult life. And then in 2002, I was feeling very fatigued. And I went to the doctor, and my hemoglobin was 10. And from 2002 until 3 years ago, my hemoglobin hovered between actually 10 and 11. And then within the last 3 years, it started drifting down. Or it didn't drift down, it sort of leaped down to 8, and for the last 3 years it's been hovering between 7 and 8. So I'm fascinated by the fact that you say, you know, you felt absolutely no symptoms whatsoever, because my initial symptom was one of enormous fatigue. And it felt different than, you know, the fatigue of depression or just general stress or exhaustion. It was a very specific kind of fatigue. And I noticed that when my counts go low, my legs start feeling very heavy. you feel that, yeah, like each thigh feels like it weighs 300 pounds, mm-hmm. and then I get a transfusion, and that sensation goes away. I have some questions, if yes. you don't mind.
I do want to get to the last three over here. Do you mind if you wait for two more minutes?
Sure.
Regarding the questions, and I'll let them. I just want to cover everybody because mm-hmm. I want to.
Hi, my name is Betty. I'm here with my daughter Elizabeth and my son Frank. And this is a couple of one-liners, I think. You mentioned it's difficult to remember what you have, the name of the disease. The way I finally remembered it was another thing we say about a doctor is he's an MD. So MDs now, that was the way I finally remembered that. But I never forget it now. About 2 years ago was when they first diagnosed through routine physical and starting in the beginning of 2012, I started under and remain under Dr. Allen's care. And I too felt fine all along and thinking, oh, this is no big deal. You know, I can live with this, you know. And I worked part-time 4 days a week until September of this year. I didn't have any, I probably had transfusions over that period of time, but I did not start taking Vidaza, and every once in a while I go to say Viagra, but I know it's not. didn't start taking Vidaza until...
You've been on three months
yes,
ago.
July of this year. And I deliberately did it on my vacation because I wanted to make sure, you know, how am I going to feel after it, right? And you get needles in the belly, that was no big deal. Be conscious of nausea. And what they do, they'll give you a pill, you know, in case you feel nauseous. But now I have them trained that they give me a pill before I take it, and I have my own supply of pills that I take one later on in the day because that first night, nausea was horrible. All right. Be conscious of other medications. I had breast cancer, stage zero, which if you want a stage, that's the best stage you could get. And it was a lumpectomy. And they put me on tamoxifen. Tamoxifen, they give you for 5 years. I thought that was wonderful. They expect me to live 5 years. So you stay on the tamoxifen for 5 years, and that's supposed to guarantee you don't get breast cancer again. And by the way, unlike Robin, mine had nothing to do with, there was no connection with the two. However, the write-up, and I read these things religiously on your medication, said that tamoxifen, and aside, all my counts are lowered, my white, my red, my platelets. They said for tamoxifen, in rare cases, but especially for someone with low infection fighting,
white blood cells,
which would be white count, can cause you to lower your platelets and lower your white cells, mm-hmm. those two, right? And so I thought, oh, maybe this is the perfect storm. I'm getting Vidaza, which is lowering my counts. In the meantime, I'm still I'm taking the tamoxifen, which is also lowering those counts. And I said, could it be that for me it's the perfect storm? So I spoke to Dr. Allen, and we agreed that for 2 months I stopped now just recently, I stopped taking the tamoxifen. Oddly enough, I don't oddly enough, but anyway, my platelet count is normally, if it goes 15, then they give me platelets, right? But, and I save all my sheets. I make sure I get a printout every time my counts come in, right? And so I had a printout of this day, and it said my platelets were 41. 41, I was all excited. And it isn't that I had platelets. It's that I had stopped the tamoxifen for about a week. The next day, it was like 15. And I didn't speak to Dr. Allen about that yet, but I said, how was it possible to go from 41 to 15 in a day? So the nurse practitioner said, well, maybe it's just, you know, you're picking it up. I said, yeah, but something's dashing it right down. And so I have a suspicion that tamoxifen could be making this worse, this count worse. And those are the things you have to kind of insist upon. You know, I'll say, well, read this. What does this say? You know, and then explain it to me in another way. Okay, and my biggest thing right now, again, I felt fine in the beginning. I say, ooh, I could live with this. My biggest thing is shortness of breath, because, again, I just left work recently. So, of course, I have chairs all over my house, because if I go 3 feet and it's too much, I sit down in a chair. It's like musical chairs all by myself, you know? So, anyway, that's my story.
Aw, thank you. Thank you. Go ahead, Toby.
I have three questions for you and one for Cindy.
Okay.
How much vitamin D do you suggest?
Sure. So the recommended dose for vitamin D for any patient, any person, is 800 units, 800 international units. You can take a higher dosage for different reasons. Now, the best way to analyze and figure out what dosage you should be taking is by making sure your physician or somebody checks your level first to determine what other dosage. For now, though, you can do 800 and then still have your doctor check out the blood level, the vitamin D level, and then determine another dose.
Okay. Second?
No. No. There's no side effect.
Second question. Should we be taking vitamin B6 or B12 or a multiple of B complex?
Sure. So I think if there is a concern about vitamin deficiency, I think that conversation should be definitely done with a practitioner and going over your concerns and have them evaluate what medicines and vitamins you're taking currently to come up with a treatment plan for you as an individual, because, you know, Betty may not have vitamin B12 deficiency versus you may. That can be checked by blood level.
No, because my first hematologist at Memorial felt that regardless of one's blood level of B12 or B6, that every patient who had MDS should be on pyridoxine. But then other hematologists have said to me at Memorial, I've never seen it work.
You know, I think taking a multivitamin for every patient, one, if you're able to swallow and take it and remember to take it, is sufficient. I think if you have a good diet in place, that's also good. But if you have other comorbidities, okay, such as an inflammatory problem like rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, or some other issues that may be depleting your vitamins potentially, then it's something of a conversation that you should definitely have with your practitioner about it and say that, you know, do I need to, can I? He or she may not know the answer, but they may refer you to a dietitian or a nutritionist to evaluate and figure out a treatment plan appropriate for you as a person.
And my last question
yes.
for you. is on one of the slides that you put up,
yes.
You said that one of the blood tests or testing that should be done for somebody who first presents with low blood counts is a renal profile.
Sure.
Now, what does that involve, and why would that account for a low blood count?
Sure. So the renal profile is a part of the whole package of a workup for any patient that comes through the door in addition to a CBC. The renal panel, the renal analysis, is a kidney function evaluation. And the two-part deal for the kidney is the BUN and the creatinine. The BUN stands for basically an analysis of an immediate issue of the kidney, if there is one. The creatinine level tells you how good the kidney is functioning in the long haul. The BUN gives me a nice synopsis. Oh, you know, Toby's kidney right now is working, but it looks a little dehydrated by a certain number with the standard levels. The creatinine is a longer acting analysis of the kidney in the long haul. And I look at the numbers again, range. Wise to determine whether the patient needs hydration, do they need an evaluation by a nephrologist? So why would those numbers be low or high, rather, not low, but high? The reasons could be because the patient has had anemia, meaning low hemoglobin. If your tank is half full, right? If your hemoglobin is 8 or 7 or something, you're still stressing your entire body, your other organs, and saying, keep on working, but you're running at half the speed. And the kidney is saying, I'm tired, give me more blood, but there is no blood to go around. So it's stressed out. So that's why the number shows up the way it does. So until it's fixed by either a treatment or a transfusion, or some other modality, maybe even just hydration. If I asked around the room how much people think they drink, water or fluids, you'll be surprised. Jay, I drink enough. Okay, well, let's look over here. We got one can over here. You know, Mona might say, Jay, I drink, you know, maybe it's not a can of soda, but a can of water, pretend. She'll tell me, oh yeah, Jay, I drink about three cans of water a day. That's certainly not enough for a person at her size and her stature for her to be drinking. Again, that's something simple, but it's meaningful for the kidneys, other organs to have, to consider and have. I'm gonna go to, you have a question?
Just follow that up with, why do people on dialysis get I mean, what's the relationship between the kidney
It's the same concept with the EPO. EPO is made in the kidneys, and what it's telling is the body to churn out more red blood cells and saying, let's go, pick up the pieces, let's get
but
that.
But that's not MDS.
No, it's that's different. It's a kidney-related anemia and separate than MDS because it's just a kidney-related anemia. The white blood cells and the platelets, they're normal. If they did a bone marrow on that kidney patient, kidney on dialysis patient,
right.
That bone marrow will look normal except for low hemoglobin. That's it. Go ahead.
I just wanted to share, I work with the same health system that Dr. Allen works in as well, and as I go around and tell people about my mom's diagnosis, and you might have had a similar experience, they'll say, well, you know, is there anything I can do? And right now, you may or may not be aware, we are critically low levels of blood in the system, in New York State, probably throughout the country. Donating blood is so easy. I've been donating for many, many years. I happened to find out recently that I'm pregnant and cannot give for the next couple of months. But I just want to say, if you have people that really, you know, care about you and say, is there anything I can do? Very simply to say, you could donate blood. It makes such a difference. You can hear in this room how many people are dependent on those transfusions on a regular basis. If you have O negative, that's what I have. Right now, they are desperately looking for O negative blood. So just one of the things to keep in mind and to share with other people that want to help you out. The other thing really quickly is that people feel differently about this, but my mom has decided to go ahead and do it.
donating your body. Nobody really wants to think about the very, you know, the very end, but the North Shore LHA Health System and many, many other, you know, health systems and hospitals have medical schools that they work with that can really learn a lot. The doctors can really learn a lot from using, you know, the bodies of people that do donate. So it's just something to keep in mind, and it's a very easy process. It's a simple one form.
And it's nice. They'll either return the ashes to somebody, or they'll throw it out at sea. So I picked throw it out at sea, right?
Aww.
And yeah, but it's a good thing to be able to do that because, you know, it's so far away from a cure. And they need to be able to work. So I did donate to Hofstra.
Very nice. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your comments and sharing your ideas. Yes?
She gave a good point about the BUN, you said.
Yes.
So when you have anemic, if you are anemic, the BUN goes high up?
Wait, no, not. There's no direct correlation with that. The BUN tells us the body is stressed.
Okay.
And it could be related to dehydration.
But if like you said, if I'm drinking a lot of water, but still my BUN is a little high up.
A little high is okay.
And the creatinine is good. It's normal.
Then that's fine.
So that's okay.
It's okay.
It has nothing to do with the...
No.
Because of the anemic blood, is the hemoglobin a little low? Or?
If it's a little low, then there is a correlation.
Okay,
but the creatinine is a long-acting evaluation,
okay.
Again,
so
that we're looking at.
So creatinine is normal, so it's okay. All right.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Could you explain the relationship between the red blood cell count and the hemoglobin? Everyone talks about hemoglobin levels.
Sure.
I have low red blood count, but my hemoglobin isn't that bad, so I get a little confused.
So when we collect a blood sample on a patient, we basically collect one tube. What we send that tube over to is the laboratory. The laboratory technician, what they do is they take one droplet, or they really don't do that anymore. The machine does everything. What it does, it analyzes one droplet and puts it on a slide. In the slide, it looks at a basically analysis of 1 by 1 centimeter. Think of it that way. It's a quick picture of who Mark is underneath. And it looks at and figures out there is 100 cells of red blood cells there. And with that, they have a formula to calculate your hemoglobin. So it's basically a small synopsis of how many red blood cells in 100 cells or 1 by 1 centimeter picture.
So they're directly related to each other.
They are. If they want to look at how many cells you're making. The other test that you should be considering and that was listed on the analysis is the retic count. That's a bigger picture. Don't focus on the RBCs. I know that people tend to look at the CBC and they're saying low, 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 low. Focus on the three big things, which is the white blood cells, hemoglobin, platelets. Ask your physician to do every now and then the retic, reticulocyte, reticulocyt, something like that. Oh, I'm spelling it wrong.
Close enough.
Yeah, close enough. Retic, retic, R-E-T-I-C, retic count. Oh, that's okay. I can repeat it. Retic, R-E-T-I-C. And what that test is a blood test, okay? And what that is basically an analysis, like a quick overview of you, how good your bone marrow is functioning in making your red blood cells. So those are baby red blood cells. So if your bone marrow is not functioning and saying, let's turn it up, that number is going to be low, okay? And if it's making enough, it's going to be within the normal. I think it's 0.4 to something, 1.6, but any laboratory that you go to will have their own range. Yeah, and just follow with that range. I truly apologize. We've run out of time. I think we have to actually exit it because there's another conference happening in here. I thank you for your introductions, sharing your stories. Again, I know that we didn't have much time about questions and answers. I know we want to continue this conversation. And I hope to share this again, this conference in the future through MDS Foundation. And maybe at that point, we can just have Q&A. And that would be good. But again, thank you so much for coming and attending this.
Thank you.
Thank you.